With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the Durr Show. Today I want to talk about three issues relating to get Trump, to the attempt by the United States government and state governments to prevent Trump from running without the legal weaponization interfering with them. I want to talk about his fine, $464 million fine. I want to talk about a lawsuit that he is now planning against George Stephanopoulos for accusing him of rape. And I also want to talk about the disaster of Navarro having to go to jail the other day without him having an appeal. Where does he go to get his time back if his conviction for contempt is reversed? Before we get to that, I just got to rail a little bit about CNN. You know, CNN has spent virtually the entire day railing against Donald Trump for what they claim is an anti-Semitic statement, where he said, mistakenly in my view, but what he said, you know, if you're a Jew and you vote Democrat, you either hate your religion or hate Israel. I'm a Jew. I love Israel. I love my Judaism. And I'm open to the possibility of voting Democrat. I haven't decided yet, but he's wrong. But Dana Bash and others on CNN called it an anti-Semitic trope because it suggested dual loyalty. No, it didn't. It didn't have nothing to do with that. That's made up. And a congresswoman from Vermont said on the show too that a vote for Trump is a vote for Netanyahu, as if that's a bad thing. Americans don't get to vote for Netanyahu. And CNN has become basically Hamas Central, Hamas Pravda. It puts on every day an Arab woman who is an alleged reporter for CNN, but who presents a totally one-sided view of what's going on in Gaza. And then it interviews people from Hamas-controlled organizations like UNICEF and Doctors Without Borders and other completely anti-Israel and pro-Hamas organizations, and rarely allows Israeli spokespeople to contribute to that. I think that CNN is contributing far more to anti-Semitism today than Donald Trump is. I wish Donald Trump wouldn't have said what he said, but I really wish even more that CNN would become a little bit more balanced in how it presents the issue in Gaza. Shame on CNN for becoming basically the voice of Hamas and a focal point of anti-Israel propaganda. For 4 months now, it's been crying wolf about there being a famine. Now the UN finally said, well, maybe there'll be a famine at the end of May. Just watch the pictures that you see of healthy, sometimes pretty fat, Gazans walking around with food stalls. Yeah, there are some people in Gaza who can't get access to food because Hamas is stealing it. But there is no famine in Gaza. There is a famine in Sudan, and CNN doesn't report very much on it. The U.S. representative to the UN wrote an op-ed the other day in which he complained about lack of concern about Sudan, where people are literally dying in the thousands of literal starvation. That's not happening in Gaza. And what's going on in Sudan is a mini genocide. And have you seen a single student protesting, you know, from the Sudan border to the, no, they only complain against Israel. They don't complain against how Iran treats the Kurds, how the Chinese treat the Uyghurs. It's only about Israel, and CNN is part of the problem. And so I want to focus some attention on that. But let's now turn for First, let's turn to Navarro. Here you get a guy who claims, he may be right, he may be wrong. I think he's closer to right than wrong, that he had not only a right but an obligation not to comply with a congressional subpoena because of presidential privilege. If he's wrong and he loses on appeal, he can serve his sentence. But he's 70-something years old. The idea that he has to go to jail pending appeal, what if he wins the appeal? Where does he go to get his years, months back? He'll serve only a few months. But what's the purpose? He's not going to run away. He's not going to commit crimes. There's just no basic reason for denying him the right to remain out pending the resolution of his case. And if he were not a Trump supporter, I think he would not be kept in jail pending. This is another example of get Trump and his supporters. The George Stephanopoulos thing is a scandal. Stephanopoulos talks to a Republican congresswoman on his show and says more than once that Trump has been found liable for rape. No, he hasn't. He was found not liable. The jury ruled against the plaintiff in the case on the rape charge. The jury said he did not commit rape. And then it said he did commit sexual assault, but not rape. There's a difference. Sexual assault can be a touching, but rape is penetration. And the jury found against that. And the jury found that she, the alleged victim, did not tell the truth about that. And you can make whatever judgment you want about that. But George Stephanopoulos has no right to accuse President Trump of rape. And he's going to sue Stephanopoulos. I hope he does. I don't think he's likely to win because same thing happened to me. CNN accused me of having said on my speech in Q&A in the Senate that President Trump could not be impeached even if he committed bribery or extortion or even murder. I said exactly the opposite, and the judge found that I said exactly the opposite. The judge said I said nothing of the sort, and that the CNN journalists were wrong and were negligent and were stupid. And he insulted them in every possible way. But then he found that I couldn't prove malice. We're appealing that. But I suspect the same thing would happen with Stephanopoulos. The judge would found that what he said was wrong, dead wrong, negligent, but that he did it as a result of an honest mistake, not malice. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it's almost impossible to prove the kind of malice that's required under the Constitution. It's ironic. I was the law clerk who worked on that decision in New York Times versus Sullivan. Now I think it went too far. And I think when you have major media that are supposed to vet their material, you don't have to prove that they actually knew that what they were saying was wrong. They did, obviously. In my case, they did. But it's hard to prove. So I don't know whether Trump's going to win his case, but he should. Nobody should be able to accuse somebody of rape when the jury found that he did not commit rape. It's not that they found nothing. They found he did not commit rape. And Stephanopoulos just accused him of something the jury found the opposite of. So there's a legitimate and plausible lawsuit. So let's turn now to the Trump fine. $464 million. For what? Is it compensatory? Did he cause harm? Did he make the banks lose money? No, they didn't lose a penny. They made a fortune. They would be happy to do business with him. Not going to give him $464 million for bond, but they would be happy to lend him money generally. There was no harm. And it's usually no harm, no foul. And the idea that a judge can just make up a number out of whole cloth and give him $464 million and give it to the state, to Letitia James, who said when she was running for office, get Trump. I'm going to get Trump. That's my book title. I'm going to get Trump. By the way, speaking of my book title, I have book number 54 coming out this week, my newest book. It's called War on Woke. Why? The new McCarthyism is more dangerous than the old. You can get it now on Amazon. Book number 54. And I've just completed a draft of book number 55. not bad for an 85-year-old. And I'm planning to, hopefully, if the good Lord gives me the strength to do it, get up to 60 books. But in any event, Get Trump. Get Trump is obviously what's going on with Letitia James and what she wants to do now. If he can't raise the bond for $464 million, she wants to become a landlord now. She wants to take over 40 Wall Street. She wants to take over the Trump Towers. What a landlord she would make. And he can still appeal. I wasn't exactly accurate, my mistake, when I said he couldn't appeal. Technically, he can appeal, but if he appeals and wins, by that time she's destroyed the value of his property. It's as if he couldn't appeal. I mean, he can't get the full benefit of his appeal if he can't raise the $464,000 and she can come and take over the property. She would be a fool to do it, but she's done foolish things before. So maybe she would try to do that. But he has a very good defense, and his defense is called the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution. It's very short. I'll read it to you. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Now, the first and the third of those, excessive bail, that's in the criminal context. Cruel and unusual punishments, that's in the criminal context. So the question arises whether excessive fines can be applied criminally or civilly, is limited only to the criminal context. The Sixth Amendment provides specifically in criminal prosecutions, and then it gives a list of things. The Eighth Amendment doesn't so expressly limit. And so the question arises, is the Eighth Amendment limited to criminal fines? I think the answer to that is no. If a fine is imposed by the state in a case brought by the Attorney General, and the money goes to the state, and there's been no damages to an individual, and the fine is imposed specifically as a punishment in order to deter future conduct, you know, if it quacks like a duck and it walks like a crime, it certainly is covered by the Eighth Amendment. So I would think he had a very strong case that the excessive fine prohibition of the Eighth Amendment covers the kind of fine that was administered in this case against Donald Trump. Obviously, the state will argue the opposite, and ultimately that issue may go all the way up to the Supreme Court. It is, after all, an important constitutional issue, and the Supreme Court has never explicitly stated whether the excessive fine provision of the Eighth Amendment is or is not limited to only criminal cases. And so imagine the following situation. You can't raise the bond. The state attorney general takes away his property, destroys its value, because she would do that. And then he wins the case. And they say, all right, here, we'll give you back your property at half what it's worth. Would he have any recourse? Would he have any remedy? The law is very unclear about that. And one of the reasons is he shouldn't be put in that position. He can raise $100 million. That should be enough to secure. By the way, the state has said his property isn't worth very much anyway. So they should be willing to take $100 million. Now, suddenly, they think the property is worth more. In any event, this seems like a terrible, terrible injustice. And it's part and parcel of what we're seeing in this Get Trump mentality. Look, as you know, I have an open mind about who I'm going to vote for in the next election. Until recently, I thought it was clearly going to be Biden. I'm having my doubts now. If Biden crosses my red line and starts to deny Israel weapons and ammunition and necessary armaments to protect itself from a recurrence of the Hamas brutality and rapes and murders, I'm open to not voting for Joe Biden. That would cross a red line for me. For example, I would never again vote for Barack Obama if he could run. He's crossed my red line when he allowed a UN resolution declaring the Western Wall, the holiest place of Judaism, to be illegally occupied by the nation state of the Jewish people. That was a red line for him, and he crossed it, and I'm through with him. I hope that Biden doesn't cross this red line, because I like him. I've known him for 43 years, just like I knew Barack Obama for many, many, many years from the time he was a student at Harvard Law School. But if he comes close to crossing that red line, he ought to be aware that there are a lot of like-minded people, Christians, Jews, and others, who support Israel and who will not vote for him if he abandons Israel. And remember, too, that abandoning Israel is not good for America, because if Hamas succeeds in Gaza, it's coming to a theater near you. And so I hope he will see and be sensible. But whatever the outcome of the election, I never allow politics and my own political views to influence how I analyze legal issues. That's why I predict correctly. That's why Mark Levin calls me the Nostradamus of the legal profession. I get my predictions right because I don't make them based on what I would like to see happen. For example, in the Fannie Willis case, I wanted to see her disqualified, both Willis and Wade, but he only disqualified Wade, and that's exactly what I said he would do. In fact, that's a good transition to one of my letters, because I think if I can find it, one of my letters doubted my predictive ability and then went back in time and checked and found out that I was right. Let's see if I can find it. I can't find it so easily. I'll come to it. So let's see what the letters say today. Here we go. First letter. If this were a trial by a jury, Fannie Willis would easily have been found guilty. I agree with you. There are people in prison today, probably people on death row. Probably people have been executed on evidence not nearly as strong as the evidence that Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade committed perjury and I think other crimes as well. This is a nice one. I hope Trump's lawyers are smart enough to watch the Dershowitz with Alan Dershowitz. Well, I can tell you some of them do, because I've gotten calls about it, not only from Trump's lawyers, but even occasionally from the former president himself, who has called me to say he agrees with what I had to say. We all see that they both lied, committing perjury, but now only one has to leave. How can the defendants expect a fair trial, not only from the DA, but from the judge as well? The judge, ignoring the criminal behavior of the DA, is telegraphing that he isn't worried about the defendant's chance of a fair trial. It is absurd. How do you do that? I mean, either they both committed perjury or they didn't. Either they both engaged in a conspiracy to enrich her and in exchange for him getting the job and $700,000, or they didn't. The idea that the judge creates a kind of multiple choice. All right, we'll flip a coin here. We'll see which one gets disqualified. He knew which one would be disqualified. He knew that she would have to can him, and she did. But she's the one who was responsible. She's the one who made the decision to hire him. She's the one who took the trips and benefited. She's the one who orchestrated the testimony. And so she should have been disqualified. And I hope she still will be disqualified. I haven't given up on that. They can still appeal it to the Bar Association. They can still appeal it to the Senate committee, perhaps to the Attorney General. I think if there is a trial and Fannie Willis is in charge of the prosecution, there will be no chance that there could be a fair trial and a substantial chance that the conviction might be reversed on appeal. Under Georgia law, if there is a conflict, an actual conflict of interest, the defendant need not show prejudice. It's automatic prejudice. And as I said the other day, even if the judge finds only an appearance of a conflict of interest, he has the right, the power to disqualify both of them. He just decided not to. He exercised his discretion not to. He said because he wants his children to think he did the right thing. Well, I don't think you did the right thing. I think you did the politically, ambitiously, politically acceptable thing to do in a county that is dominantly Democrat, but I don't think you did the right thing. Will Wade and company be ordered to reimburse the fees paid? No, I don't think so. I think that that's fait accompli. I think the money has been paid. They have to now pay their taxes on it. Okay. So here's the letter I was referring to that I couldn't put my finger on exactly. I doubted Allen's claim that he did a Nostradamus on the Forney ruling, but going back and checking the record, I found a receipt that does indeed confirm Allen predicted this outcome last Wednesday, a couple of days before the final ruling. But after a ruling about the charges in the case, Allen said he figured the judge would only disqualify part of the legal team and not both Forney and her boyfriend. I went further. I said that he would find not an actual conflict, but an apparent conflict, and that he would recuse only Nathan Wade and not Forney Willis. So I got it exactly right. Again, I want to emphasize, I get it right almost all the time. In fact, virtually all the time when it comes to predicting sophisticated and complex legal results, not because I'm smarter than the other lawyers, but because I'm more honest. I don't engage in wishful thinking. I don't confuse what I want to happen. For example, in this case, I wanted them both to be recused, but I don't confuse that with what I think will happen. And that's true of all of my predictions. Many other academics predict in a way to create kind of not only wishful thinking, but self-fulfilling prophecies. They figure if they predict it, maybe it will happen. That's not my job. My job is not to influence the outcome of the case, but to accurately predict what the outcome of the case will be and would be. And so I'm going to continue to make predictions of this kind. I've made another prediction that may very well turn out to be wrong, but everybody on CNN has predicted that the Supreme Court will simply affirm out of hand the lower court decisions granting President Trump absolutely no immunity at all, and saying that even if he had immunity while he was president, that immunity doesn't survive post-presidency. I predicted that there would be a more nuanced decision, that the court would hold limited, very limited immunity, much more limited than what Trump wanted, but much less limited than what the other side wanted, and that they would hold, if he had immunity while he was president, that immunity survives after he's president, because it would make no sense to say you have immunity while you're president, but as soon as you leave the presidency, you can be criminally prosecuted. If a president takes actions and that action turns out to have been in violation of the law, but it was well-intentioned and within the scope of his presidency, surely that ought to be subject to immunity. You know, it's not in the Constitution, immunity for the president, but neither is judicial immunity. And the courts have held that judges have immunity, even lower court judges have immunity for whatever they do on the bench. And that was just invented. And the court said, in order to fulfill their judicial functions, they have to talk to law clerks, they have to have immunity, etc. That's right, but it's also right about the president. So I would hope, here I have a situation where my hope and my predictions are essentially the same. I would hope that there would be some immunity. I'm not sure there will be. And I know one thing, it will be a split decision. It will not be unanimous like the Colorado case was unanimous. So I'm going out on a little bit of a limb and making a prediction there. Okay. What are your thoughts about Chuck Schumer's disgraceful tirade about our friend and ally, Benjamin Netanyahu, Professor Dershowitz? Look, what Schumer should have done if he felt strongly about that Israelis should do something to substitute a new prime minister for Netanyahu, he should have called Netanyahu, in a private call and said, look, I think you've extended your welcome and you ought to resign. I know what Bibi would have said, because I've known Bibi for more than 50 years. But the idea of him going public and making a speech, basically calling for the end of the Netanyahu regime, saying it's not in the interest of Israel, that's an issue for the Israelis to decide, not an issue for a Jewish American to decide. If you want to make decisions about Israel like that, you move to Israel, make aliyah. But don't threaten. I mean, you're the highest ranking Jew in the government, and you are the, majority leader of the United States Senate. When you make a statement like that, it comes off as a threat, and particularly when it's combined with Biden's implicit threats as well. And so I think that it was a terrible misstep for Schumer, who I've also known for many, many years since he was a student at Harvard Law School, to have stuck his nose in Israeli politics. And then you have a politician from Vermont today saying a vote for Trump is a vote for Netanyahu. No, no, no. A vote for Trump is a vote for Trump. And a vote for Netanyahu is a vote for Netanyahu. And don't confuse the two. That creates a terrible, undemocratic resolution when you tell an ally who's the most democratic country in the Middle East and one of the most democratic countries in the world that a vote for Trump here in the United States is a vote for Netanyahu in Israel. That just foments the kind of division that we hope we're trying to avoid and minimize in this country. Okay, so how many bananas now, Dersh? Franklin said a republic, if you can keep it, currently the republic is on pause. If Biden is reelected, then the republic ended under the first Biden administration. I don't agree with that, we're at six bananas. We got up to seven, and then when the Supreme Court ruled, as it ruled in the Colorado case, we went back down to six. I'm sticking to six. We'll see what happens. Some of these cases, the Trump fine, the Navarro case, maybe lean a little bit in the direction of seven, but we're not there yet. I want to be cautious in giving out bananas, and so I think six is about right. How can a DA run on targeting a single person and not be disbarred? So blatantly dishonest. How can she be trusted to be honest, even if it's criminal? Okay, I think you're right. I think there should be a bar rule preventing any prosecutor from ever targeting any individual. That was true of Letitia James. It was true of Alvin Bragg. And I think it was probably true of Forney Willis. It was probably true of some other DAs as well, but these are the primary ones who essentially have targeted individuals. And that's, you know, what Stalin and Beria did back in the bad old days of the Soviet Union, when the head of the KGB said to the tyrant Stalin, show me the man and I'll find you the crime. And we've seen that in parts of our history, in extreme cases. Everybody knew that Al Capone was the head of the Chicago mob, and they knew he had killed people. They couldn't prove that, so they targeted him. And they went through his tax returns, and they found enough to prosecute and convict him of tax evasion. We've seen that before with the mafia, with mobsters, but we've never seen that in our country's history with political opponents, and we are seeing that now. And it's going to be tit for tat. We're going to see it on behalf of Democrats. We're going to see it on behalf of Republicans, and it's wrong for both. As an old-fashioned liberal Democrat, I don't like it when it's used against Democrats, and I don't like it equally when it's used against Republicans. And I hope that once the Trump era is done, whether it be at the end of this year, at the end of 4 years, we can go back to a time when the criminal justice system was objective and neutral. And, you know, the rules, the oath you take as a justice and as a judge is to do justice without regard to party. That goes back to the Bible, Lo Takir Panim. The Bible says, do not recognize faces. Do justice with a blindfold. Don't know who it is who's in front of you. Don't know whether he's black or white or male or female or Republican or Democrat or Trump or Biden. The key to objective justice is the blindfold and the weights that are equal. And we are eliminating the blindfold, and too many judges and too many prosecutors are peeking underneath the blindfold. And too many are looking to do justice based on who the person is. And that's not good for America. And what is good for one party is deemed to be good for the other. When I talk about these issues, sometimes people answer, yeah, but they started. Yeah, that may be true, but each side has an obligation to do justice, not only to do justice to your side, but to do justice to the other side. You know, what's happening today in Berkeley, for example, is there's an attempt to suppress any pro-Israel speeches. People have tried to break in and use violence to prevent any pro-Israel speakers from speaking. And people say, oh, that's so disappointing that it's Berkeley because the free speech movement started at Berkeley. No, no, no. I was there. I was there. I remember. I was teaching at Stanford during the free speech movement. The free speech movement was never about free speech. It was about free speech for me, but not for thee. It was about free speech for the left. It was never about free speech for the right. The people who stood up and demanded free speech were only demanding free speech for their side, not the other side. We have to return to a day when we have literally equal protection of the laws for all people. We are far, far, far away from that. I hope we'll return someday, but it's not going to be too soon. We're in for a rough ride, and we'll keep tabs on this because my determination is to make sure that the law is applied equally to everybody and that constitutional rights are applied equally to everybody. So I'll see you next week. Have a good weekend.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.